Hello, and welcome to episode 71 of the Planning Period Podcast. You're at Break Room. I'm your host, Brad Scheffler. This week on the show, I'm joined by Dr. Sarah Thomas, technology coordinator, public speaker, and founder of EduMatch. I'm connected with Sarah on Twitter and Voxer, and I've heard her on a couple of other podcasts, so I knew she would be a great guest on the show. Sarah and I talk about EduMatch and how it started, about talking to people and the importance of it, inequality in education, not just of technology, but also just access to learning, the importance of including student voice, not only in assignments, but in decision-making, the Future Ready program through the Alliance for Excellent Education, the importance of being open-minded and trying new things, and why we should learn from our past. So, sit back and enjoy episode 71 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Dr. Sarah Thomas. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Brad Scheffler, and I'm joined today by someone who, for honestly the majority of my listeners, probably needs no introduction. And I'm very excited to be joined by Sarah Thomas, who, if you don't know, is the founder of EduMatch, is a technology specialist, is a speaker in a million different places, and just an all-around advocate for education, I feel like. And I am really excited to be joined by Sarah. Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Brad. I am truly honored to be here.
Thank you. For my audience who are living under a rock and have no idea what's going on in the world of education online, could you give me a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. So my name is Sarah. It's my 14th year in education. I'm a regional technology coordinator by day. I also work as affiliate faculty over at Loyola University. And last but not least, I'm the founder of EduMatch. So just kind of wearing a lot of different hats and just loving it.
Yeah, it's you know, you're definitely in a lot of places, it seems like. You know, we're connected in a few different places between Twitter and some of the Edupreneur Voxer chat with Dr. Will and a couple other spots. And obviously, I'm a follower of EduMatch as well. So there's a lot of places where we're connected, and you kind of seem to be in a lot of places. Let's just kind of jump right into this. With as many plates as I feel like you have in the air, how do you prioritize or balance each of those things?
Oh my goodness. It's like so much smoke and mirrors. It's ridiculous. I want to say that automation and outsourcing are my friends. And in addition to that, I have like some amazing, amazing, like real friends, you know, like connections. And I feel like we're building a lot together. So I just really, you know, have to give it up for my community and my professional learning family. So, I'm just really blessed to be connected to so many people who, you know, have a similar, mission and vision and life goal. And we're able to kind of connect brains and come up with stuff together.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. I definitely, when you said smoke and mirrors, that definitely spoke to me because, you know, a lot of times what it looks like is not always what it is, right? You know, it's a little chaotic. And sometimes, I don't know if you experience this as well. Sometimes I say, oh, it's a lot of smoke and mirrors. And then when someone else starts to say all the things I do, I start to wonder, you know what? How do I do all that? That sounds crazy.
Right. I hear you on that. I hear you. But I guess that's what life is, right? Like at the end, you'll look back and be like, wow, I did all that. So, I mean, you know, that's my end goal anyway.
I was going to say, at the very least, if you can look back and say, wow, I did all that, you probably did pretty well, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Totally.
That's awesome. Well, I kind of want to talk a little bit about EduMatch because it is such an awesome, awesome service. But could you tell my audience a little bit about what that is and sort of why you founded it?
Absolutely. So EduMatch is a community of educators around the world who get together and connect along similar areas of interest. We use all different kinds of social media to come together, have conversations. We make stuff together, like, and by making stuff, I mean, we do podcasting together. We write books together. We have conversations like around the clock on Voxer. Like we have two rooms on Voxer. So one of them is maxed out at 500 people. And that's kind of like the originals. And then we have a second room, with about 300 people in there too. And I mean, just some amazing individuals. So, you know, I just love my commute because then I get to catch up on what's new in everybody's life and just seeing, you know, how everyone has grown over the years is just amazing. I mean, talk about looking back, like over the, what, 4 or 5 years we've been together, and just kind of seeing, you know, the journey of all of these individuals. It's just amazing. And I guess like the way that it started, I was having a conversation on Voxer with a friend of mine, Rafranz Davis, and she has a strong background in math. And at the time, I believe she was a math coach. I might be getting that mixed up, but we were having a conversation about gamification in math. And so it reminded me of a conversation I had with my cousin, who also used to be a math teacher, and he gamified his classroom with fantasy sports. So I said, the two of you should get together and talk shop, and you should talk to our mutual friend, Chris Aviles, who is big in gamification. And, you know, from there, then I just had like that idea, and I was just like, okay, well, let me look and see if there's anything out there like that. And I looked, I didn't see anything. I was just like, oh, okay, well, let me go ahead on Twitter and see if anybody would be down to try it. And within like minutes, this guy from Australia, Mark Yates, was like, yeah, I'm totally down. So I was just like, tell me about yourself. So he told me about himself. He gave me a short bio, and I started tweeting out with like different hashtags and checked back with him at the end of the day. And he was just like, oh, this was great. You know, you should keep it going. So I set up a site, set up a Google form, and, you know, people started signing up, and as they brought themselves and they brought their ideas, and we've just like grown from there. So it's been an incredible ride.
Yeah, it definitely seems like it. Now you guys have a full publishing arm, and yeah, you guys are doing all kinds of stuff with the EduMatch now.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's definitely, none of that was in the plans that first night. Like I didn't even really take it seriously, to be honest with you. Like I had like this ugly logo in Google Drawings, and it was like the most awful thing. And I think that was part of the appeal, because people were just like, ugh, what is that? And then when I explained it to them, they're just like, oh, okay. So that actually ended up working out until somebody came along and was just like, oh, well, you know, here's a logo you can use free of charge. And I was just like, oh, thank you. So, you know, that's the logo we've been using since.
Nice. And I'm also personally very excited because you guys are in the works of a documentary with Mr. Dr. Will, who is a huge, huge friend of mine. I love Dr. Will. I'm super pumped about his documentary coming out.
Oh, he is awesome. Yeah, Dr. Will is incredible. Just so full of energy and great ideas, and just, you know, a supporter of so many educators. He's always like an encourager. So it's really an honor to be able to work with him on this.
Yeah, it is. You know, with everything that this has become, as it has grown over the years, and it has become something that started, you know, in a conversation with a friend, and now is this whole thing. It's a thing. what part of it are you most proud of?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say that I can't take credit for this at all. But I am most proud of the connections that people make when they're in there, because I mean, and I've been on I've been benefiting from this as well, but just like, I mean, we've become more than, you know, a community. Like we've become a family. A lot of times you hear, you know, people will be talking, and like the first time they meet face to face, and it's just like, oh, and you feel like you're at your high school reunion. And then maybe the second time you meet face to face, and you know, you're like eating dinner with the person's family, or like crashing on their couch when you come to their city. So, I mean, just watching those connections, cause I think like deeper connections are really what we're all about. Meaning that, you know, we're going beyond the surface, and it's not just like, you know, we're going to talk, you know, to each other for a little while and then part ways. And then, you know, maybe I'll see you next week. No, we go below the surface, and, you know, people know about each other's families, you know, each other's kids, what we like, you know, what makes people tick, their fears, their hopes, their dreams, you know, what they had for dinner. And I mean, stuff like that, you know, we're able to have conversations that really gets to the heart of everything, you know? So it's much more impactful, I feel, to have a conversation with a friend when we don't see eye to eye, as opposed to a stranger, because it's easy to write a stranger off and be like, oh, that guy's a jerk. But, you know, if you're disagreeing with a friend, then it's just like, oh, well, let me try and see where you're coming from, because I kind of get it. I kind of get why you think that way. And this is why I think that way. So let's talk about it, you know? So that's really allowed us to have some really good conversations.
Yeah. I like that. That's definitely something to be proud of, to have been able to build a network, especially in today's age of what we believe social media has become, and the vacuums and the echo chambers and every other fake news buzzword we can throw at it. You know, I think it's really powerful that you have been able to, with the support of others, build a place where, you know, people go beyond that. And I really like that they're able to have discussions where they don't agree, because I feel like there are definitely not enough spaces on the internet where you can disagree with each other in a polite and productive way.
Right. Absolutely. And I feel like the Voxer platform, the voice based aspect of it really allows you to kind of dig in and get some more nuance than you tend to get like in other platforms that are text-based. So I think that really lends itself well to it as well.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I love it. I think it's a great system. I'm working on getting involved. I just have a problem with Voxer. I don't know. I just can't get into Voxer. I've tried so hard. I really have.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work for me.
It doesn't work.
I don't know why. I think part of the problem for me is I listen to like 15 hours a week of podcasts. And so to try to add more listening into the middle is just like, it's inconceivable. I just can't. It hurts my head sometimes.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I hear you on that. It's different strokes for different folks. And I totally feel you. I'm trying to get into audiobooks, but I'm just like, I have to give up Voxer. I can't give up Voxer. So I totally hear you on that.
Yeah, I think we all have our priorities, right?
Yeah.
Well, totally. I do want to get into my questions with you and ask you some things I like to ask, as it were. And my first question for all my guests is, what is the biggest problem facing education today?
Ooh, the biggest problem facing education today. That is a great one. I say that there's a lot to it. Inequity, I would say, if I were to boil it down to one word, inequity. And there's so many different layers to that. There's inequity of access, which is, you know, a lot of people's minds go to devices, but it goes beyond that. It's inequity to opportunities to learn, you know, to transformational learning opportunities. Inequity of so many things, inequity of fairness, you know, being treated fairly, and inequity of social capital. I was reading some stuff from the Christensen Institute. The director's name escapes me right now, but she has some amazing work about how schools, the role of schools, one of the roles that we can play in disrupting, you know, inequities in society is by building connections with students and people in the outside world. Because a lot of times, you know, where you end up might be because of who you know. And if you're born, you know, if you're not born into like a network of knowing like all these billionaires, then it might be harder for you to see yourself among the billionaires. So definitely helping to shape that equity there, schools can help in that way. So I would say inequity is probably the biggest problem in education.
What would you say? Because I don't disagree with you at all. I think there is some humongous inequity issues. But I also think that when you talk about this, you get a lot of people who will push back on that argument and say that the access is there, you know, well, that doesn't happen in my district. What do you say to people who, cause I've heard you talk about this before. I kind of thought this might be where you go with this answer. And so I know it's something you're outspoken about in general. So what do you say to people that will push back at you and say, no, there's no inequity. There's no issue where, you know, okay, maybe some schools have technology and some don't, certainly. But other than that, you know, we have programs in place like Title I to help with those issues, and we have other programs in place. So, you know, that's not actually a problem. We're just trying to make it a problem.
I think that a large part of the design process, like I'm a huge believer in the design process, and at the heart of that is empathy. So I think that it's really important to talk to people and to talk to the end users, you know, talk to kids, talk to teachers. You have to, you know, to listen and to hear the experiences and the stories of people. Like, my ears and eyes have been opened by just connecting with folks from around the world and just hearing, you know, how situations are in different schools and different districts. So for me, that's been the biggest eye opener, because, you know, we can only see what's in front of us if we're not looking elsewhere. It's like we have the blinders on, right? If we're not looking outside of what's directly in front of us, then we're not going to see it. So part of it, we have to take the blinders off. We have to talk to people and hear their stories and educate ourselves. So I guess that would be what I would advise for someone who doesn't see it.
Yeah, I definitely I agree with you completely with that empathy component. And I think it's, you know, I see it all the time, even in a more local way where, you know, teachers struggle just to empathize with students at all of, you know, okay, they've got 7 classes a day. And if you multiply the homework you gave them by 7 times, yeah, it is only 10 minutes, but that's over an hour for a full day. So, you know, I think sometimes they do struggle with that empathy component. And I get it. I think teachers have 1,000 things on their plate and are struggling to help as many students as they can. But yeah, I think we could all benefit from a little more empathy for sure. Right. Once you get them on board, once they're on board and they say, okay, there's an inequity issue, I get that. We need to deal with that. How do we deal with that? What do we do to fix this inequity?
Ooh, there's not an easy answer to that. There are things that we can do individually. There are things we can do collectively. It all depends on the situation. I think that probably the best thing to do would be to take a needs assessment of one's own area, you know, first. Like, the first thing to do would be to kind of ask, you know, to ask and to see what we see, what challenges we have in our own sphere of influence before we take any kind of action on it. So there'll be some things that might be relatively simple fixes. Like, for example, I wanted to flip my classroom and I realized that not every student had what they needed at home to be able to watch the video. So, you know, I brainstormed with other educators and came up with a few fixes ranging from burning content onto DVDs to, you know, to opening up my classroom at different times, like before school, during lunch, after school. So some things are simple like that. Some things are a lot more involved. And I think that it takes all stakeholders to really make, you know, to really make some significant changes. So, you know, I'm part of the Future Ready National Advisor. So I'm on the EdTech Coaches Strand on the Coaches Strand with Brianna Hodges. But there are several strands, including principals, library media specialists, you know, several different stakeholders that are represented in Future Ready. And really, it takes all of us. It takes everybody to get to the heart of the issue. So working together and also bringing in parents, bringing in students, bringing in the community. I feel like that's going to be the way forward. And also reaching out to other schools or districts or what have you who face similar challenges. They probably have some ideas as well. So that kind of underscores the whole need to get connected as well.
All right. Yes, I totally. You got my mind running I almost sidetracked and then you hit where I wanted to go at the end there. So I'm going to come back to my other question and ask you what Future Ready is in a minute. Okay. But I want to first ask, you know, I know you're someone who does travel around and speak and see a lot of districts. And so can you tell me some best practices you've seen across the country, things that are working really well right now?
And as far as digital equity or general?
Just in, I mean, equity in general. If you want to go with digital equity, I'm good with that. Or you want to go with some other equity practices that are speaking to your heart.
Absolutely. I would say that, some of the major things I would think of, would be number one, to include students in the process, as you know, they are really who we're doing this for. So their voices need to be heard. So, this goes beyond including student voice, you know, in their assignments. I mean, and while this is absolutely crucial, also involving them in the decision-making process, I think that that is, that's definitely the direction we need to head. And also, when it comes to teacher professional learning, then I would say that there's so much out there that is available for free to help us benefit ourselves so that we can benefit our students. So from ed camps to Voxer groups to Twitter chats to listening to podcasts like this one, there's so many things that so many opportunities to level up our own professional learning. So, so some of those things are definitely beneficial. I know that in my own district, then there are several initiatives. And right now we're in the middle of a one-to-one. So we're working through, we're definitely working with our educators, in our district to help, you know, to help the transition. But going beyond just the devices, the professional learning for the devices, it's really a whole mindset shift. So I'm really appreciating seeing this process.
I like that. Yeah, I'm definitely, I especially appreciate getting students involved in that decision-making and the tie back to student voice. Cause I think we talk about student voice a lot and we talk about student voice and choice in assignments, but to think about including them in that decision-making process and that planning process, I think is a really powerful tool, to instill the empathy we're hoping to get. Right. I mean, I think if we're hearing students speak about the things that are important to us, instead of just the things that are important to them, that can help with that empathy component. You know, I've also done that. I am also involved. I'm a technology coach, and I'm involved in rolling out one-to-one programs at a couple of different schools now. And I personally take stock and take surveys and pulse through students who I've built relationships with and I'm comfortable with. And I get a lot of information from them that, you know, their teachers probably wouldn't tell me, honestly. And the students don't realize, you know, what they're saying because they're just saying how their experience has felt and what it has been like for them. And they're able to give you a different perspective. So, yeah, I think that's a great idea. I think, you know, we're not going to be empathetic of people until we listen to them. So I think that's a great idea. I think that addresses a lot of the issues at once.
Yeah, thanks.
So I do want to double back. And you mentioned you're part of the Future Ready initiative. What is that?
Yeah, Future Ready is, it goes through the Alliance for Excellent Education. A lot of amazing people on there. Tom Murray, Dr. Avril Smart, Leah Dawson, Sarah Hall, you know, and several amazing individuals. And there are five strands. I believe there are five strands. there might be more, but really it's a way to, It's a way for stakeholders to work together to move education forward. And at the center is the learning experience. So the personalized learning experience, for all learners. So students, educators, we're all learning together. So I really, really love that about Future Ready.
Very cool. And so what do you really do with them? What do they do, I should say?
Yeah, so they have different ways for educators to connect and for stakeholders to work together, like in their own groups, but also across the districts. And they have a framework, which is great because district teams can take the assessment. And in the assessment, then it will help you diagnose where you are and some things that, you know, that your district is doing well, some things that can be improved upon. And there's lots of surveys that can be given to stakeholders to just kind of get everyone's perspective on it. And it's a really great tool for seeing exactly where the district is and what gaps need to be filled and what are already the strengths. And then they have summits where there's different geographical areas. And they have like these free institutes, 2-day institutes, and people come together and just kind of work through a lot of challenges and a lot of opportunities. So, I mean, it's just a really great experience. So I would definitely recommend that anyone who has not checked it out, definitely check it out.
Yeah, that's excellent. I'm, you know, just looking at their website a little bit, they have a lot of state by state data comparing you to the national averages and a lot of really cool resources on here. So yeah, I would definitely say go check that out. And of course, links to that will always be in the show notes as always. So if you want to check that out, just slide over those show notes and check out the links to the Alliance for Excellent Education. Yeah, that's a cool program. I really like that. You know, like I said, you do kind of seem to be a little bit of everywhere.
Yeah, it's definitely an honor to be able to be involved with them. They do great work, so I'm definitely a fan.
Excellent. Well, I think we've had a good discussion here about equity and some ways to work. I think we could probably say we've barely scratched the surface on solutions, but I think it's a good starting point. And I think if we start with empathy in mind, we can really start to address some of those issues or find the ways to address some of those issues. So I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you.
I want to move into my second question.
Okay.
And this one gets a little more personal, and it is, what is something you're doing that you wish all educators would do?
Oh, something I'm doing that I wish all educators would do. I would say I consider myself to be pretty open-minded when it comes to trying new things. So new programs, new ideas, just constantly seeking new things, but not discarding the old. Like that, I think that that's one thing that is a little, that we can't do. We can't always be on the lookout for the shiny and new. There are some things that, you know, we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but I think that if we're always curious, always learning, to paraphrase a good friend of mine, Dr. Nicole Howard, then I think that would level up the profession, I think. So definitely, I see a lot of my peers that are, you know, definitely very open-minded, and beyond being open-minded, very active in their learning process, their lifelong learning process. So I definitely would encourage a lot of people to remain curious. And I said definitely 50 million times, but that's because I definitely, I definitely agree with that.
I get it. Yeah, open-minded. I'm about it. I like it. I, you know, as a technology coach, and I'm sure you've seen this as well, it is not usually a lack of capability that holds someone back. It is, mm-hmm. It is a fear of trying something that holds yes. teachers back. It is always the fear of that. And I'm sure you've seen this, but so many times I will sit down with a teacher because they need support with whatever platform or tool they want to try to use. And I often can just sit there silently and they'll just work through it on their own. Mm-hmm. And they never needed me in the first place.
Right.
And so I think that sometimes it takes a person like you or a person like me who to just sit there and remind them, you got this, like mm-hmm. you can do this. And I agree. I think it is sometimes that lack of open-mindedness, that fear of change, that fear of something new that can hold us back. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think if everybody were like that, I think we could definitely see some change. But I do also caution, and you mentioned it, about throwing out old practices. And I feel like that's a really difficult balance
yeah.
to look at practices and be able to say that's good and works, or that could be better, or that just needs to go away. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how you go about that. Does it come more with new tool first and ooh, this would improve X, Y, and Z? Or do you come from more of a, this is a problem, let me go find a better option? How does that process of evaluation look for you?
Well, I would say for me, then it varies, but typically I would say my pattern kind of falls for the most part into somebody will tell me about X tool that does Y. And I'll say, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. How does it differ from, you know, this other thing that I'm currently doing that works for me? And if there's something in there that might be, you know, that might be beneficial, then I'm definitely open to giving it a try and seeing, does it really improve my practice? Does it really improve what I needed to do? Or is it just subbing one tool that's worked great for me for something because it's new and shiny? So a lot of times just being very critical in that way of just finding out, is it new and shiny? Is that the appeal? Or is there some kind of functionality upgrade? And if it's the latter, then I'm more inclined to kind of give it a go. But definitely trying it out in a low risk situation and just seeing how that goes.
Okay. I like that. Yeah, I think that that critical mindset is important to keep in mind. You know, you said before that you don't ever want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I often feel like districts get so large and such a behemoth levels that those seem to be the two directions they seem to know how to go sometimes. And I think it's on us as teachers and people on the classroom level and even at the school administration level to be able to make more gradual, moderate change. I think that's an important thing for us to keep in mind and to look at those changes critically. I like that. I'm good with that. It's a good answer.
You know,
you're 2 for 2 with great answers.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. No, I was just going to say, it reminds me of like a pool. There was like a blog post I wrote back in 2014 where I was kind of thinking about it, the difference between jumping in head first and jumping in feet first. Cause you know, when you're like in shallow water, then they're just like always going feet first. And I mean, it's definitely about taking the risk, about trying something new, but not being reckless, not jumping in, you know, head first, because then you break your neck. So definitely don't want anybody to do that. So, so taking those risks and trying things is a bonus, but not going in and throwing just everything out for the new and shiny and bells and whistles and everything. So, yeah.
I was always the kid that did the dive, even though it said not to dive though. So I've always both literally and figuratively done the head first dive. That's always been me. I'm all in every time.
Oh, I hear you. You're probably a pretty good poker player then.
Yeah, sure. Let's go with that. We'll go.
Okay.
Okay. I like it. Yeah, it is. I like the idea of the feet first instead of head first. That's good. I'm gonna stick that one. I'm gonna put that in the notes. Faux show. Cool. All right. We're doing great. We're 2 for 2. We're rolling right along. Let's go right into our third question. And here we get real personal. Okay. And this one, my third question for all my guests is, who is the greatest teacher you have ever had?
Ooh, the greatest teacher I have ever had. Can I cheat?
Always. Everyone does.
Yes. Okay. The greatest teacher I have ever had, and I have this right on the tip of my tongue because I just did a keynote about this. The greatest teacher I've ever had is the past, because we learn so many lessons from the past, not even our past. I can live vicariously through other people's past, and that will teach me so many lessons for what I need to know in the present and in the future. So I will go with the past.
All right, I'm gonna take that, but I am gonna ask you to pick a teacher. I am gonna ask you to give me a story of a teacher, because I agree we definitely need to learn from our past. I think there's a lot of power there, but I am gonna ask you to give me a teacher if you can.
Okay.
A person.
A person. Okay, I'm probably gonna go with. I'm trying to narrow it down, but I can't. But I guess I'll clump them all together and say my family, my mom, my dad, my brother, my grandmother, those four individuals specifically, have taught me just so much without them even realizing it. Just by being themselves, like as I was reflecting not too long ago, then I realized exactly how much I got from each of them, because those are the four people I spent the most time with as a kid. I was very tight knit with my family you know, I did have friends, you know, in school, but really it all came back to the family. And I realized exactly how much each of them has rubbed off on me in their own way. Like, for example, my brother, who was huge on music, and he would play Thriller. Like, he's 13 years older than me, so he had these turntables and he would play Thriller. And I mean, I ended up DJing. And my dad, who is so into technology and writing, and I mean, I picked that up like a sponge, you know. And my mom, who she was and still is a writer, and you know, and also an educator. And just, I mean, that's also had a huge influence in my life and her work in the nonprofit sector. She's currently on the board for our EduMatch nonprofit branch. So, I've learned so much from them, whether they realized I was watching or not. And my grandmother, who, you know, she was there the first 17 years of my life. But I learned so much from her personality wise. So I would say just a mashup of the four of them have been my biggest teachers.
All right. I'll allow that. That's good. I think, you know, to bring it back to the classroom, it's the power of those personal connections, and the things that we don't even mean to teach, right? I think, even in the classroom, that can be so true. It's the things we don't mean to teach to our students that are the byproduct of the intent that are sometimes the things that we're remembered for by students, I think.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Excellent. Brett Coley, for example, he's writing a book about the power of story. So I don't want to spoil it, but he tells a story about like how there was, how he can open a water bottle with like one hand, and how he was unconsciously doing that one day. And this one girl who had him the year before was just like, "I remember that." And he's just like, "I remember what? You remember what?" And she's just like, "You're doing that thing." And he didn't even realize that that thing was something that she associated with him. So it's crazy. Like how much, you know, people, how much our students are watching us, and we don't even know. Sometimes they know us better than we know ourselves.
Mine is a pen flip. I flip my pen around my fingers obsessively, and my kids all recognize it. It's like a thing that they, and inevitably at some point every year, each class will realize and then spend an entire period trying to figure out how to do it.
Oh my goodness. It happens
all the time.
Let's see, I need to
learn. If I wasn't so OCD and like just fidgety, I wouldn't keep doing it, but because it's distracting apparently. But no, here I am still doing it.
Oh man.
I had to stop doing it when I'm podcasting though, because I'll drop it every like fifth or sixth time, and then it kept showing up in the podcast. So I had to like keep pens away. I had to go to note taking on my computer to stop me from doing that.
Oh man.
A little behind the scenes of the podcasting world for everybody there.
Okay. Like pop up video kind of like boop, you know.
There you go. You go back and listen to episode 1 through 10 and you hear that random noise. That's what it is.
Exactly.
All right, cool. Now you just got me excited that Brent Coley's writing a book, because I love his podcast, and he's been a guest on here as well. So I'm actually really excited about that now. Wow, Sarah, you got so much good stuff. You got so much awesome stuff for us.
Thank you.
I'm going to do something a little different here. I feel like you have everything. I feel like, not everything. That was going to be an oddly phrased statement. Let's try that again. I feel like you have a lot going on. I feel like you've got things sort of, you know, hands in all the pots and a lot of stuff happening. So is there anything we didn't talk about that you'd like to talk about or tell my audience about, or, you know, maybe promo if you want to promo, or, you know, an idea or concept you want to talk about?
Ooh, see, right now I'm drawing a blank, but watch, as soon as we stop recording, everything is going to be rushing to mind. I'll be like, oh man, I should have talked about that. but no, I mean, you know, I think we talked about most things. Got a new book out. So again, wanted to give a huge shout out to Dr. Nicole Howard and to Regina Schaefer. We're doing a 2-part series with ISTE on digital equity. So the first one about higher ed, that one just dropped, earlier last month, I want to say. And in there, you know, there's definitely some nerding out about trends over the years, ed tech trends. So Had a lot of fun writing that. So that was cool. And we have our second one that's about to go into edits. So that one's for K-12. So other than that, let me see. The EduMatch Publishing, we have a lot of people on board. So super excited about that. And the foundation, you know, we're starting to get cooking with that as well. So just excited. Excited about all of these collaborations and just grateful and honored to, you know, to just know so many awesome people.
Excellent. Great. Well, you mentioned the book, so I will definitely have links to that in the show notes, of course. And how else can my audience get a hold of you if they have something they want to hear you talk about?
Absolutely. I am on Twitter at Sarah the Teacher, so I'll spell that out because it's kind of crazy. SarahDaTeecher. Also, EduMatch is on Twitter, edu_match. And we're at edumatch.org. And I'm at sarahjanethomas.com and sarahtheteacher.com as well. So that's pretty much how to find me. And on Voxer, Periscope, Sarah the Teacher.
All right. Branding on point. The same everywhere.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Well, Sarah, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. I really appreciate it. And you have a great evening.
Thank you so much. And you too. You have a wonderful evening as well.
I will. Sarah, thank you so much for being on the show. It was a great conversation. And true to form, you've already connected me with a couple more future guests. To connect with Sarah, find her on Twitter at SarahTheTeacher, which link to is in the show notes because that's easier than trying to spell it out, or at her blog, SarahJaneThomas.com. Also check out EduMatch at EduMatch.org. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter. I'm at Brad Schreffler and the same on Instagram. I love to hear from you guys on either of those places, and it's also a great place to connect if you would like to be a guest on the show in the future. You can also check out my feedback page if social media is not your thing and find some other feedback options there, which you can find at bradschreffler.com/feedback. Until next week, remember to dive in, but do it feet first. Music for the Planning Period podcast is the song Vicious by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com. The Planning Period podcast is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. VoiceEd Radio. Your voice is right here.